You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here with Dan Natterman, of course, and Mr. Nick Griffin, and Rebecca Trent, the owner of Creek in the Cave.
Hi.
In Long Island City, is that correct?
That is correct.
Queens. And we're waiting for a woman who wrote, was it a flattering article about Creek in the Cave?
Quite flattering, one of the best ones ever written.
All right. But normally Natterman has some of the stuff he likes to...
Did you
well,
read it?
I don't love the way Noam introduces that. I would prefer just sort of an organic, or we organically flow into it. But in any case, well, first of all, I should mention that I just read on Twitter that the show Crashing has been renewed for a second season. So I guess that's of some relevance because it's...
That's awesome.
It's filmed here, and it uses a lot of Comedy Cellar comics as cast members, in addition to Comedy Cellar managers, bookers, and whoever else happens to be hanging around. But I guess that's good news. Did you hear that, Noam?
You're talking about Crashing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it was renewed, correct?
That's what I just said.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But you were busy on your phone.
No, I'm trying to... Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Dan. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying
that
Crashing
news.
Is
that's
renewed. But in other news, something happened to me last on Friday that's never happened to me in over 20 years of doing stand-up.
Oh.
I had to leave the stage early because I had to take...
Boom?
Yeah.
No!
Really?
This is the story you wanted to start with?
Well, what's wrong with that story?
Was it something you ate?
Boom boom.
Wow. Well, it wasn't a boom boom. It was more of a boom boom implies a certain consistency. That
more of a puddle?
I was on at the Fat Black Pussycat.
Oh, yeah?
And I thought I could get through it. But after about 10 minutes, I decided that I have to make a call.
Yeah, good for you.
And Seton Smith, the MC, was not in the room.
Oh, no.
So I had to just say, I ended on a laugh. Whether anybody in the audience knew there was anything amiss, the look on my face might have betrayed me, I don't know. But I then ran off stage and said to Seton, get back on stage. I'm sorry, I had to leave the stage. So anyway, Noam is looking at me with daggers in his eyes.
No, I can't believe it. And where did you make your boom boom? Underground?
At the Underground. Now, in part, of course, I blame the cellar for...
Go ahead, say it. Sorry.
Go ahead, let it out.
Well, first of all, you know, the chicken...
I want to see how this gets around to the cellar's fault.
I know already.
First of all, you know, I
the
think...
The chicken? Is that what you're going to blame? The chicken?
But even beyond that,
uh-huh.
You know, at the Village Underground... First, there's no good place to do that here at the Comedy Cellar. Downstairs, the bathroom is unacceptable. You will agree for that purpose.
I don't like... I only go in my own home under protest. Truthfully, I don't
projectile
don't like.
Diarrhea
now,
should
now,
stay
boom,
at home.
Boom, boom is not okay with me.
And now, around the corner...
Like, my daughter would ask, why did God make us have to make poop? Like, this is the kind of thing she had. I don't... Like, did God have... I've said this before. God has, like, all the equations up on the blackboard. Like, and is that... Can't do it without poop. Like, you know, like you make the universe, the planet is everything.
The numbers, it's part
of it. If I take poop out of the equation, the whole thing falls apart. We had to have poop. So go ahead. It doesn't make any sense.
Do you suffer from an intestinal issue?
Also, it's because around the corner at the Village Underground, there is a bathroom attendant. I believe his name is Ali. He's a wonderful guy.
He's amazing.
He comes from West Africa. A beautiful man.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody hands me a towel like he can.
Do you tip him, Dan?
And I always tip.
How much you tip?
I tip a minimum of a dollar. If I only have five, I say to him, here's five, but the next time I may not give you a tip. And I do anyway. That's how generous I am.
Classy guy.
So we have a rapport. The problem is when you have a rapport with somebody, you don't want to do certain things in front of that somebody.
Of course not.
So to go down there.
You have a relationship with this
person. And I'm walking
in
and he said, hey, how are you doing? Yeah, well, no time for that. You know, it's a little embarrassing. So my plan was to finish the set and get home as quickly as possible. But
my father used to go to Panchito's.
Yeah.
He did. Because first of all, nobody noticed the difference in Panchito's. Second of all, but he couldn't bear to do it in Ava's apartment. He had to have total anonymity, so he'd go to Panchito's, and it had to be a Mexican restaurant.
One time, I tried to go to NYU Law, which is around here, and the guy wouldn't let me in.
Oh no!
Because I wasn't a student, I didn't have student ID.
For some reason, the only time in my life where I've had to make that compromise has been in airports. So something about traveling.
Huh.
I can't. From time to time, but otherwise, I will not. I just won't. I will not.
Oh, you will if it gets to a certain point.
No, no.
You will if you just had the hummus.
No. I would tough it out.
Well, in any case,
I don't have that kind of luxury.
In any case, what can I say? I made the call that had to be made. We're here with. did that woman come? The other guest
was that the lady? Oh.
We got stood up by a writer from the New Yorker. Was it New York or New Yorker?
New Yorker.
The New Yorker, which is like supposed to be a classy.
It's a fancy magazine.
Yeah.
Not New York Magazine. The New Yorker, which is. But anyway, we're here with the owner of the Creek in the Cave.
So she wrote an article about Creek in the Cave, which is the only competitor of the Comedy Cellar that I will. that I don't want to see bad things happen to. For whatever reason, I met Rebecca and I took to her, and I think that we can be friendly competitors. I think like the rest of them they're nice to me, but they actually want to do me in. And we had that thing with the guys from the stand a couple weeks ago, whatever. And I like anyway. It says the Little Fish of New York stand up. The Creek in the Cave is a sprawling comedy complex. You know, I need to go. Can I go there?
Please. That would be amazing.
It's a sprawling comedy complex that includes a Mexican. Oh, you have a Mexican restaurant too.
Yeah.
So you can make a boom boom there.
Yeah, I can.
And,
<That's
true. laughs> and a podcast operation and a bar. And what is the gist? Stephen, you want to give us the gist of this article so that. Since
what do you mean the gist?
Like, sum it up for him.
This is what I do. What do you mean? What do you mean the gist?
Put these on.
What is it that you're trying
you
to? Okay, so it's essentially saying that it's kind of an unkept or a
what? What did you just call it?
It's a well-kept secret.
Unkempt is what he called it.
An unkempt, well-kept secret, and that it actually, you know, is making underground strides in the comedy community.
And that's it nice. Also says here that your drinks are very cheap.
Yes, they are. We have $2 off happy hour, so like almost everything's $5, and comics can drink PBR tall boys for $2.
Oh. And because that's a running controversy between club owners. Like most of the comedy clubs have very, very expensive drinks.
Right.
You choose to have very, very cheap drinks. Our drinks are cheap too. Probably not as cheap as yours, but our drinks are like bar price.
Yeah, your drinks are normal prices. Yeah, yeah. We're an artist forward space. So we,
we're not. Is that what you're saying? We're
no,
not.
No, 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 not a, not a, kidding, not at all. But I just mean in the
kidding.
Sense that like these guys literally badgered the shit out of me for about 5 years, and I finally broke down and got PBR. Like that was never really like
PBR is a brand of beer.
It is a brand of beer. Pabst Blue Ribbon.
You're talking to Jews now. We really don't know this stuff. We don't know the
oldest beer in America.
Well, no, I know Pabst Blue Ribbon. I just didn't know the
that they call it PBR. Yeah. So that's what the kids are calling it these days. But you can get a tall boy for $2.
What's a tall boy?
That's a sixteen. Is it 16 or 24? I think 16 ounces is a tall boy, right?
I mean, you're the bar owner here.
Well, I mean, you'd think, but he doesn't know either, so I feel all right about it.
I don't know. We don't have tall boys. Well, let me ask
I think
this
it's
question.
A 16 ounce.
Do you know your liquor percentages? Like, do you know how much you make on each liquor, how many bottle, how many shots in the bottle? Do you all that nonsense?
Yes.
You
yes,
do.
I do. I have to.
Yeah,
I have to.
I've never done that, and I know I should. When I needed to do
really?
It, I couldn't remember how to
do it. I did it because it is very difficult to do, particularly in our business, because so much of what we do involves buybacks and stuff. You can't really definitively get it down to the nickel, but you can get it down to the dollar, you know. So I try and keep it as close as possible. The original bar on like the beer distributors and stuff would make fun of me because I would do my inventory. I'd literally count the cans instead of just round up the cases and stuff. But I keep inventory tight because I want to make sure that I've got my shit together, and I also want to make sure that nobody's stealing from me. Not that I think anybody is.
I'm not criticizing you at all. It's always been one of my things I'm least proud of is that I just never.
You just don't do it.
I tried from time to time, but just never got. It never got me anywhere.
Do you know your food and your payroll breakdowns?
Like what percentage of gross they are?
Yeah.
I know what they were used to be.
that's kind of where I'm at too right now.
But I also found that unless I could catch a bartender stealing,
which it does nothing for you. Otherwise,
there's nothing I could get out of it. I couldn't. I couldn't raise my prices more than the guy next door was charging. I couldn't get the liquor cheaper than what I could get it for. I try to make sure that they didn't pour. And I do stay on top. At least I used to. I would try to catch bartenders.
You catch the pours.
Not ringing up alcohol.
Do you guys have a buyback policy here?
No, I got rid of buybacks because
what does that mean? Sorry.
Usually when you have a regular customer, or customer who you can tell is parked there for the night, every third, fourth, or fifth drink will be on the house, depending on the bar.
It's basically management-sanctioned stealing is what it is.
Basically.
We used to do it, and then I had a rule that the bartenders had to ask the manager for permission before the buybacks, whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And then I just said, fuck it, no buybacks.
Yeah.
If that's the only reason they're coming, we'll just have to find some other, because I just opened a door. There was no way to control it.
Right.
But when I used to spend time in my bar all night on a regular basis, I was ready to allow certain things. I felt I had a feel for it. At the point where I changed, I spent more time at home, and I said, you know what? No.
You just have to cut it off altogether.
I just cut it off altogether. And it didn't hurt business at
all. No, it won't.
Yeah.
By the way, what do you mean by artist forward?
Because what do you mean by that?
That's a term I've never heard. It sounds like
And wait, just before you answer that, Nick, have you ever worked in Creek in the Cave?
No, I have not.
Yeah.
No.
What the fuck?
One of the things is I can't just call Dan and be like, hey, will you? I don't pay spot pay like you guys do.
This
we
guy
don't
has
charge
more
covers.
Letterman appearances than any human
you're
being.
Not, you're not listening, no.
But we don't charge covers and stuff. So that I look for those comics
for
to come to me, like Ted Alexandro, Colin Quinn, like. They come to me and say, hey, I want to do a run at the Creek, or I want to do this, that, and the third, and we always accommodate and make sure. But that's what I mean by artist forward. It's not really so much. I want to make sure that the comics are taken care of, because we're there to sort of be a dojo for every level of comic in my mind. And then on top of it, we're also there to sort of educate the audience, because there's a lot of people who don't know how to be a member of a comedy audience. They are terrible, and it's an education process for them as well, I think.
Well, see, that's the difference, Noam, is when she says she's artist forward, is that she views the Creek in the Cave as a workshop, she called it a dojo, whereas you see this as, you know, the graduate school.
Everybody does. This is where you get your PhD.
You're not looking to develop people,
right,
necessarily.
I don't know. I'm not looking to develop people, no.
With the caveat that if you think somebody's going to be famous, you might want to get on their good side and start using. Obviously, that's good business.
I mean, this is what I think. And I think Rebecca is saying the same thing, actually, although she's not putting it this way at all. She went in it. She seems to be in it to have fun in a certain way, because this is what you enjoy. I mean, you don't have any responsibility in life to be an artist friendly to help comedians. You enjoy comedians.
I promised my grandfather before I died that I was going to give 2 years back to the community. And because I'm a military brat, it is really important for me to build environments wherever I live. I do that because I lived in a different environment every 2 to 3 years of my life. So I grew up with that.
Wait.
Like,
you're kidding about your grandfather, right?
No, I'm not kidding.
You said before you died, before he died.
Before my grandfather died. Yeah. Did I say it wrong? I'm sorry.
You said it wrong, but it's okay.
2 years.
I promised to give 2 years back to my community before my grandfather.
Long Island City is your community?
Whatever I defined that as. He was a physics professor at Old Dominion University. And
it's fascinating.
So when I graduated from college, I helped run a nonprofit in Washington, D.C. called City at Peace. I did that for 2 years, and then I moved to New York to do what I wanted to do. And what I realized was, I enjoyed so much that work that I did with City at Peace, I wanted to apply it to groups of serious artists that were working towards a goal. I worked with theater people. I worked with musicians. By far, the ones I wanted to work with the most were the comics.
And is your grandfather still alive?
No, he's not. He passed away when I was a freshman in college.
Can I ask, why were comics the ones that you most wanted to work with?
They were the ones I wanted to break bread with. They were the least likely to break my stuff, you know, like steal my mic stands, tag up the neighborhood, that kind of stuff. Like, they were the most polite. And then also, they are the most under-advocated for group of artists in this country.
She's
we expect immediate response from them, immediate material from them for every single facet of this world. Pop culture, observational humor, it doesn't matter, anything. And 9 times out of 10, they're not getting paid. There is no HR department. There is no gold watch at the end of all this. Like, there is nothing there. And to watch that level of sacrifice on a regular basis and know that they're not going to get the payoff, it makes me want to advocate for them. It makes me want to be a part of that community in a significant way that's going to help them.
Were you a fan of that before, of comedy before?
Stand-up? I mean, sure. Like, I grew up with Comedy Central. I love stand-up comedy, and my background was in theater But it just never occurred to me that comedy was a career. I don't know how you guys got the message when you were growing up that that was an option.
Well,
but
I didn't
never...
get the message. That's why I went to law school.
Ah,
you
I
know,
see.
No, I didn't get the message at all. But, you know, eventually I went in that direction. But, yeah, so...
Yeah, I don't know
and
what
I'm
it
still
was
not,
I thought,
I'm still so. Not getting the message.
What about you, Nick? Did you always want to be a comedian?
Yeah, I think on some... I wanted to be a novelist or something, but then I was always into comedy, really into comedy at a young age. Probably, you know, 12, 13, I would rent a VHS of, you know, Pryor and stuff. But, yeah.
Pryor was your favorite?
Well, I mean, no, just only because he was what was out. Like, there was only 10 VHS tapes of certain comics, you know, and his was one of them. I liked all the guys back then, Seinfeld and Louis Anderson and a handful of others, but...
Nick has a sinus infection, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, I have, but it's been there for years and years, and I can't get rid of it. It is. But then I did stand-up one night at an open mic night in college, and I was around all these other cool young comics, and I caught the bug, and I never stopped, yeah.
Wow.
That was at the end of a kind of a comedy boom in the late 80s. So there's a ton of work. Like, I got out of college and I could make, not a lot of money, but I could pay my bills just doing stand-up around the country. And
are we experiencing a comedy boom now?
No.
I don't know.
Well, we're experiencing a comedy saturation right now.
It seems like there's a boom insofar as the public perception of stand-up comedy. It seems to be everywhere. First of all, on TV, we just mentioned Crash and got picked up for a second season.
There's like 400 documentaries out right now.
There's documentaries on comedy.
Comedians are selling out the Garden.
They are.
And so people want to be comics.
In that sense, there's a boom. Whether the average comic is making more money than they did in 1988,
I don't think that they are.
I don't think so, but certainly at the high end, they're making probably a lot more.
They're making more money at the Cellar than they ever did before.
Well,
it's spread out over more of
Have
you always had this number of in your team?
Well, as I said on the...
It's not spread out over more of them.
As I said on the last episode that you were on, whether there's a comedy boom or not is an open question. That there is a comedy cellar boom is without question.
Without question, yes.
Obviously, there's a boom right here in our little corner of the comedy world known as the comedy cellar.
I mean, that's not easy to say, but it's hard for me to imagine that we're having a boom outside the general public interest in it. I mean...
Yeah, right. The two have to. There is some relation, but the boom at the Comedy Cellar is out of all proportion to, I think, what's going on in the rest of the stand-up comedy world.
Yeah, I think the boom at the Cellar is about people wanting to be at the Cellar, wherever. But a lot of clubs around the country, I don't think, are seeing a ton of people coming up, but they are watching it more than they ever have. And there's bigger names and more big names than there ever have been. I think, you know.
So maybe we shouldn't open in Vegas.
Is that a
Rebecca,
thing you can open in Vegas?
Thinking about it.
Well,
about
that? Not just thinking about it, but from what I hear, it's almost a done deal. It's not 100%.
Wow. Well, there's been papers drafted, but I haven't signed anything.
So why don't you think you should open in Vegas? Because you don't.
If there's no comedy boom, I'm going to lose my shirt.
No, you won't lose your shirt.
I don't think you'll lose your
shirt. Lose something.
I don't think you. No. Think
Carrot Top's still selling out in Vegas. That's tourist dollars. It's
famous.
Different.
He's
you know?
Famous. You know, my father on his deathbed made me promise to take care of my aunt.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't promise that.
That really happened?
That's really happened.
And
yeah.
Then he says, well, just try.
Well, go ahead, finish my story for me. Thank you, Stephen. It wasn't finished. It's called timing, you jackass.
So you said to your grandfather that you'd...
last time I told you... And so, but anyway.
You told your grandfather you'd spend 2 years giving back to the community. And those 2 years are up?
Those 2 years have been up since...
All right, so but have you changed?
Fell.
Have you changed your modus operandi since the... Since the 2 years ran out?
I mean, I did a little bit of soul searching for myself for a couple of years and then ended up buying the creek. So,
but
I
you're
mean,
still
I,
giving back. You still see it as a way to give back.
I do. I mean, it's certainly not a way for me to become lucrative financially. So,
Rebecca.
Yes.
Move to New York. Not that I want you to.
You mean Manhattan?
Of course.
Oh, I mean, I'd love to.
You can do
that's
it.
That's an expensive endeavor.
No. I mean,
no?
it can be, but...
Well, but is there... Is
no,
there
no, I mean, he's 100% right. I would be living a completely
but is there
different
a,
life
is there
if
a,
I was
enough
in Manhattan.
Of a market to support another comedy club in New
more
York?
More than is Long Island City, yes.
Yeah.
Let me tell you...
More than in Long
Let me
Island
tell you
City.
What I know from experience. Over the course of 18 months, mm-hmm. if you have your ear out, there will come across an opportunity of getting into a space in Manhattan very cheaply.
Yeah.
There's always somebody going broke, someone who's 6 months behind in a rent, someone like whatever.
Sure.
The Fat Black, that the entire Fat Black Pussycat, the lounge next to it, and the Village Underground was a $10,000 investment.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I can't even wrap my head around that.
I this is what happened. I was supposed to close. I was supposed to come up with $20,000. I didn't have the $20,000. I went to the closing and I said, "Look, I got 10.
Here's what I got. Yeah.
I'll pay the other 10
when I can."
Over the next 12 months.
Uh-huh.
And they said, "Okay." So I put $10,000 down. The other 10 came in from the bar. From that money, I was able to move to the east and the extra room, and then I took a partner who invested to build the underground.
Wow.
So that's it. So yeah. But these things happen all the time. And that's a huge space.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, so.
And anyway. You do it even cheaper if you don't have a bathroom attendant.
That's all true.
That's actually the thing that I would be most, I'm not pushing back on you, but I think that's the one thing that Creek would stand to lose most from moving to Manhattan is that right now you have, much like the Cellar does, you have a complex, you have a hang, you have the restaurant upstairs, you have the theater, you have the pinball machines downstairs, you have the podcasting studio in the adjacent room, you have right. the outside, you know? Is that something
spoken like a Gentile.
I mean, the truth of the matter is that, I mean, he's right in the sense, because there's so many spaces in New York, I could find a space that's comparable. There are an awful lot of spaces in New York that are underutilized, back rooms, that kind of thing. What'd you say?
You don't have to give up the one in Queens.
Yeah, no. No, but I mean, just based on what you're, I mean, it is the most sound advice. There is no question whatsoever that I would be much better off in Manhattan. I'd be able to do, I mean, hell, the comics would have birthday parties there more. That alone would be worth it. You know what I mean?
And if you're booking them here, then you will have a much easier time of getting them to
get bigger names and
to go perform in Queens too.
Exactly.
I'll give you this five. So would you do? You know, you do the weekend, and they'll do it, and they'll do it happily. Not like you're twisting.
Well,
their
and the Creek right now isn't even a past club. We're in the process. I'm going to announce at the Creek Awards, but we're about to become a past club.
What do you mean a past club?
Well, like right now, anybody can perform there on the main stage or downstairs.
You've invented two new words here today.
Have I?
Past club and artist forward.
I really thought that was I thought
artist forward may be an actual term.
Past I feel like that is.
Past club, I think you just made that up at a
I
whole
did.
Club.
Well, I'll do it. That's fine. I made it up. I'll take it.
I've never heard it.
But, you know,
a past
we're
club
about
means
ready to...
that you there you, not anybody can perform there. As you
not just anyone can perform. Yeah,
you,
there's like a, there's a list of approved people to book from.
I got it.
It's funny that you mentioned the emphasis on community earlier, because that's what I've always seen as the reason why Creek, in my opinion, has always been comparable to the Cellar, is because there is a sense of community. It's not just approached by the higher-ups as a pure business. I mean, you talk to some
I hate
other
when people say that. It's a pure business, Steve.
No. You know what
it's
I mean. You know, you talk to some club owners, maybe perhaps even some club owners that were on the episode of our show that featured the other club owners, and they don't have a hang. They don't have
because they're not good businessmen.
And they also
I should have said that. But I'm saying it's all. I shouldn't say it's pure business. There's no separating it. Put it another way, if it were bad for business,
you wouldn't do it.
I would not do it.
Why do all these other clubs struggle so much? I mean, really struggle to get by when you are kind of
Struggled. We struggled for like 20 years.
No, of course.
Well, you didn't struggle. You paid your
bills. No, we struggled.
The bills got paid.
Yeah, you could. But struggling doesn't mean you're not paying your bills. Struggling means you're
biting your fingernails off.
You go behind a few months in this. You go behind a few months.
Right. And if one great thing had happened, then
can you let me talk? We wait for the summer to come when the business is stronger to make up for the bad times that you had. That's struggling, right? No, go ahead, sir.
I suppose.
No, and if one bad thing had happened, you said that your father said that from time to time. Like if there had been one storm,
one particular year where we felt like we were one snowstorm away from disaster.
Yeah.
And then
I don't know, the fact that these other clubs still exist makes me think you may be exaggerating slightly when you say that you were one snowstorm away from disaster, because all these other clubs are still around.
But that doesn't mean they're thriving.
But they're still like they're not out of business.
they're existing.
Well, in some cases, they own the building that they're in, and in some cases, they have a lease that's so long that they're paying 19-whatever rents instead of current rents. But if they were to be put in a situation where they lost their lease or they had to move, there's no way they'd survive. I think that's, that's basically, it's like living paycheck to paycheck as a family. It's the same way with small businesses.
I'm not saying there weren't relatively lean times. I think that it's getting loud. It's a motherfucker.
It really is.
Fight's about to break.
Oh, it's Keith Robinson.
Keith Robinson.
Never mind. It's Keith Robinson.
Anyway,
he's got a condition. Leave him alone.
Be that as it may, obviously now things are 10 times better than, they ever were.
Yeah, try 20.
And Noam is floating in a sea of cash.
No. I'm saying things were really tight for a very, very long. I mean, listen, whatever. Yeah, we did struggle. We definitely struggled. I mean, this is how we struggled. I remember when it was time. That's gonna sound wrong. Never mind. Just take my word. We struggled. Meaning that a guy in our position. Well, I didn't have $10,000. I didn't have $20,000 to put down on a business in the year 2000. I could not come up with the $20,000.
Come on, Nick Griffin can come up with $10,000.
So, you know, now was I living badly? And no, I would go out to dinner. I had a car, whatever it is. But in the end, I was not able to get ahead enough to put away any real money. So that's
business owner broke just doesn't look the same as other kinds
that's
of broke,
right.
But yeah. It's still broke. It's the same thing. I'm in debt to my eyeballs. I have zero money. I haven't paid myself in 10 years. Broke is broke. It looks good. You know what I mean? Nobody thinks that I'm broke, but I am. It's just the reality of it. And in New York, you have to pay an asshole tax just for being here. There's so many things that you get banged out for that you can't even imagine. You have to pay 6 months worth of insurance up front for your restaurant. You have to pay every 2 years. You gotta shell out a significant amount of money, a check with a comma in it to the state liquor authority, even though you've already paid $20,000 for your liquor license 10 years ago. Like, it's just constant. You constantly get banged out for stuff. So it's hard to plan even, like, to know how much money you need to have in the coffers from year to year, because some years are worse than others, you know?
And the winter is a time of uncertainty, you know? Like
March is the worst month of the year, and the 7 train isn't running for every weekend in March this month, so I'm extra fucked for my, like, worst month of the year.
And now business is so good, like, if it had been a bad snowstorm, I would have lost a fortune there.
Were you guys closed on Tuesday?
It's a joke, huh?
Were you guys closed on Tuesday?
No, we were not closed.
You stayed open, right?
Yeah, but because the snow worked out. You know, it snowed early in the morning.
Right.
So what else?
Well, we had another guest, that woman from the apple cider, or the...
Cinder Block.
Listen,
Cinder Comedy Festival.
I don't want to make an enemy of this woman who was supposed to come on the show.
The New Yorker lady?
Yeah. But because that would be a dumb thing to do. Like, I saw Carlito's Way. I know to be careful. But Benny Blanco didn't show up to the show today, and it's kind of annoying me. Like, at least calls and tells you're not coming.
Right.
Anyway. Go ahead. So, Cinder Block lady?
Oh, okay. This is Allison Klimp, everyone.
What, you want?
Oh, I know.
Can
I know.
Show,
Allison,
can I show her this?
Allison and I are buddies.
Imagine if I showed you something that was like really.
Is this my bio?
Unflattering. No, it's to introduce her, right? Yeah.
This is Allison Klimp from the Cinderblock Comedy Festival. What the hell? Why isn't Corey
Hello.
Here?
I am her surrogate. I'm the
surrogate.
Katrina Pearson.
We don't
Trump.
Need. We only got about 5 microphones anyway.
Are you a founder of the Cinderblock Comedy Festival?
I am one of the founding producers.
Oh, that's exciting.
Corey,
that's cool.
Corey is the originator of it, and she is the main director that we all report to.
In a nutshell, what is the Cinderblock Comedy Festival?
The Cinderblock Comedy Festival we're now in our second year. It's a festival that is a diversity-minded festival, but we're not, sorry.
Well, what
talking to white guys.
Yeah. Basically, we got a lot of flack last year because we have a wage gap pricing.
What does that mean?
Submission fee. So it's that for our early submission process, we are open for women, LGBT, people of color, people with disabilities to apply
essentially anybody but somebody white, correct?
Everybody except
white,
straight white guys, basically, yeah.
Straight white ladies still get a discount.
Everybody but straight white people.
Everybody correct. But straight white
and you're comfortable with that?
Yes, they were comfortable
with
that.
Go ahead.
We still, you know.
This is in year two.
This is just for the early submission process, just to give the other people a little bit of a one head start. And also, it's mostly to send a message that, hey, other people that are not straight white men who maybe you feel ostracized, we want to hear you also. And then for our general submissions, which is now what we're in, white guys can also apply at the same rate as everybody else.
But they don't have any shot.
They have plenty of shot.
I'm kidding. So so did I miss that? So what is it? It's just a comedy festival?
It's just a comedy festival. Yeah. It's just a comedy festival.
Comedy festival
a little
with the
PR hook.
With the emphasis on diversity.
With an emphasis on diversity for the submission process, but when we're doing the booking, when we're reviewing people's tapes, we apply the same standards to everybody.
What kind of diversity are you? You seem ethnic of some sort of ethnicity.
You're not supposed to ask, Dan. Of a non-European
nature.
If you were to guess.
Transgender.
Racially.
Well, if I were to guess,
transgender.
Well, your last name is Klemp, so that doesn't help a whole a good deal. But
I have for a fact know she's not Jewish. That's out.
Contrary to
popular belief.
Well, Jews have been lumped in with white people for purposes of diversity, generally speaking.
Certainly.
Well, in comedy, I guess it's more of a gray area.
You look Spanish.
Yeah. So what do you think, Spanish?
Latina.
Yes. Latina.
Yeah. I get a lot of Spanish. I get a lot of Latina. I'm actually Japanese is my other. But yeah, Japanese
and
German.
You're half white, half Japanese.
Yes.
Well, konnichiwa.
Is it half and half, really?
It's more of a quarter.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I do think that, generally speaking, I poo-poo the notion of diversity. A physical diversity. In other words, diversity to me is a great thing when it's diversity of opinion, diversity of skills, diversity of, those sorts of things. I do think in comedy, however, diversity does have some intrinsic value because I think talking about experiences on stage makes for a different point of view. In other words, I do want to know about what it's like to be transgendered.
Absolutely.
I don't think in a business setting, having X number of blacks, X number of whites, and X number of Hispanics is of much validity.
Well, yeah, we don't have quotas.
But I do think in a stand-up context, having diversity has some validity because the audience probably wants to hear different points of view.
And that's exactly the point, is that it's like there's lots of people with different backgrounds, and those people have different perspectives. Assuming, of course, that you
talk about those things on stage.
Yeah, but I feel like that's kind of the trend, isn't most people talk about their life experiences.
There's a blind fella. Goes by the name of Brian Fischler.
Mm-hmm. What color is he?
He's a white. Well, I think he's Jewish, but he's white.
Oh, disabilities.
Disability.
His disability. Because I'm wondering.
What about somebody who can't get through a set without pooping? Is that a?
Well, lactose intolerance. lactose intolerance is certainly.
Count for something.
It's also a way to differentiate your.
Brand.
Your festival is just to do
right.
it.
Exactly. It's a good PR
hook. But what about a blind guy?
Yeah.
A blind
guy? Write about.
Yeah, of course a blind guy. If he's funny.
No, but would he get a special treatment? Could he apply under the diversity quota?
Yes.
They'd be sure to charge the glow tape that day, probably.
This is my thing about diversity.
How do you light a blind guy, I guess, as I want?
How do you... Oh!
No, he has... I'm not sure, by the way, number one.
Like
number he has a guard.
Table?
He performs with a dog that might be able to perceive...
You light the dog, and then the dog...
Well, I assume that a dog can see a light and can go... Rrr.
Yeah, yeah. I would be interested in the training process of that, getting the dog.
Or maybe...
Does he take the dog on stage?
Yes, he does.
Yes.
Oh, that's impressive.
In general, this is my thing about diversity. Although you can present to me a scenario on a given night where diversity benefited whatever enterprise it was introduced into, on the whole, I think the social costs of diversity, the tear in the social fabric, and the lowering of reprioritizing DNA, as it were, over... objective
skill.
Standards is one of the most damaging things that happened to our society in the last 30 years. When I was a kid, you would look at, and I've said this before, you would look at a workplace, and if you saw no diversity, you would say, well, that might be evidence of discrimination. You know, it was supposed to be content of your character, not the color of your skin. And if you saw all white people, you'd say, well, maybe there's some racism going on there.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's no longer, now it's, The end is to make sure that there is diversity, even if it doesn't mean the content of your character, even if it doesn't mean the most talented people. Unless, of course, it's sports, in which case you got to win the basketball game. So there's no interest in diversity in certain things where it would be absurd. But in a workplace where it's just not so obvious how many points somebody is scoring and there's not clear stats and you don't have wins and losses, they'll give you a million reasons why you have to have diversity.
Yes, but Noam, what about my point that in the specific world of stand-up comedy,
listen,
diversity has some intrinsic value because...
I book a comedy show, and I get this pressure all the time. Need more women, more of this. I'm like, you know, they think they want more women. I put on the five funniest acts.
Right.
And it's great if it's a woman.
But there is some extra value if you can get diversity.
No.
Can I ask this? If you woke up tomorrow...
Wouldn't you like a female perspective?
No.
Okay.
What I want is the happiest customers.
For the purpose of business, though, if you woke up tomorrow and 100% of your entire comedy team that you work with, all your artists, are all white guys, wouldn't you feel it? Wouldn't that make you uncomfortable or make you feel like you needed to?
No.
Not at all?
Yeah, but it would affect business.
I think it would. I mean, it's bad PR if nothing else.
The worst thing that I can do to business is to not have the best acts, whatever
color
they are.
But it would affect business because variety is an intrinsic part of the product that you're selling. If you have five guys that go on and talk about similar things, you need to have a black guy to talk about the black experience. The audience wants to see that.
Otherwise, it doesn't give white people permission to laugh at white people.
Have black people, gay people, whatever. People tend to connect with what they are.
If you give them a questionnaire before the show, would you like to see somebody talk about it? They say yes, of course I'd like to see that. But then afterwards, if he wasn't funny. And say, would you prefer to see that guy, the white guy? They say, yeah, we'd rather have seen the funny white guy.
Yeah, but given a choice, when you have a shit ton of funny...
But I feel like this is also implying that we don't book funny people because we still hold everybody to the same standards.
Given a shit ton of funny people, though, no.
Hilarious would be if you only booked white guys and just did that with the submissions.
Just for the record, we book a very diverse show here.
Of course you do.
It's with no eye towards diversity, which I think is the ideal that we're supposed to be working towards as a society. To make diversity an end in itself is just to tell people to define themselves.
It's weakening.
Always in terms of their chromosomes.
But you're not listening, though.
And that, I think, I'm just saying this has a huge social cost attached to it.
I agree with you, but in the world of stand-up comedy, variety and differences are part of the product. There is an intrinsic benefit. If you have a shit ton of funny people, some are white, some are black, aren't you going to make some effort to mix it up a little bit?
It's also different.
If I look at your lineups, you know, I see there's always a black guy.
There's no effort to mix it up.
You would not book a show with no black guys on it, generally speaking.
But you also
Keith Robinson, would I book a show with no black guys? Happily. Absolutely, he says. No, the second that we have some black guy in the lineup, or any guy in the lineup, that everybody says, listen, he's just not as funny as the rest of the guys, people are going to look at him, what are you doing? Why are you giving him a spot because he's black?
But that's not what we're doing.
No, I'm not saying it's what you're doing. Okay. But if you're not doing that, then you shouldn't have to consider diversity.
But given a lot of people at a high level of skill, I'm not saying book an unfunny black person or an unfunny Indian person. I'm saying given you have a large group of people to choose from, it's a good thing. You have Mo Amer, for example, who's new here, who brings the Arab-American perspective, if you will.
Yes, but that's not why we book him. It's a wonderful benefit.
It's a wonderful benefit.
Yeah,
but you agree that there is a benefit to it,
particularly in this with this work.
The better question is, would it book a show?
Well, could you speak into the microphone?
would I book the show? What?
Would you book a show without a white guy?
Would you book a show without a white guy?
The answer is no.
Yes. No, Keith, I'll tell you this. When I had my band in the old days, when I first started my band in the WA, it was all white guys and one black guy. And over the years, every time somebody would leave the band, I would have auditions, and I ended up hiring another black guy and another black guy. At the end, it was like seven black guys and me. And I always worried, like, how will this be perceived by the audience? Would it start changing? It didn't matter. No. Nobody cared what color anybody on the stage was. They still came in the same way because it was good.
That's music.
The music is different from comedy, obviously.
Why is music different than comedy?
You're expressing your own personal
point of view.
It's different from comedy because everybody know we dominate music.
And you dominate comedy.
No, we don't.
No, they don't dominate comedy.
Hey,
they have
shut up. All right. No, it's different.
Maybe you don't dominate comedy, but you're pretty well represented in the top comics. Kevin Hart, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock.
Those are three biggest.
Those are the three biggest Netflix specials anyway.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's different to have all black guy show. You can have an all white guy show, but you can never have an all black guy show. When have you had an all black guy show?
That night we had that big fight downstairs. That Wild West fight we had where they're throwing chairs. Remember that? That was the last time.
Never again.
No, listen, I'm sorry to sound like a curmudgeon about this. Of course, I'm sentimentally pleased when I see diversity. Like I said to you one time, when I see a brown-skinned family celebrating Thanksgiving, I feel tremendous pride in my country. When Mo Amer did the Colbert Show, I was like, this is a great country. Here's this Palestinian guy going on the Colbert Show. You know, this is what's best about America. I just don't like to see that as the end in itself. I just think what's wonderful about America, the end in itself should be quality and integrity and all that stuff. And then what's wonderful is to see that in America, this is accomplished with a diverse group of people.
Variety adds to quality. You say what, Rebecca?
Oh, I mean, we do all black shows at the Creek every now and again, and all girl shows at the Creek every now and again, and it's not the goal. It's just how I end up booking the show that night. It's not intentional. But
would you have an all woman show if you had five killer female acts that just annihilated the room?
Of course I would. Why not? Would.
But the bigger thing too is that a lot of times when you do have these all female shows or an all black show or an all whatever
I don't
show.
Advertise it that way,
exactly.
though.
Because well, yeah,
I don't think there
isn't
any
you
reason
don't, but
to.
That does happen, and especially with festivals.
It's garbage.
Like, and you're like, ladies are funny too, comedy festival, and like all this crap. And like that's kind of the stuff that this was a response to, was to basically be like, look, we can present a festival that has all these different people with different perspectives on it without also being derivative to those people.
Now look, you have your enterprise there, the Cinderblock Festival, and I have nothing but support for any entrepreneurial thing. It's great. So don't misinterpret what I'm saying.
Okay.
But when he just hates affirmative action.
No, yeah, but when you actually go out there and give money off to submissions based on the accident of birth, it bothers me. It just bothers me. It seems as un-American
as
anything else.
Well, it's a difference of $6.
And the
whatever. It's the principle.
Well, the counterpoint would be that we are a victim of our own biology and we have to deal with the wage gap on the reg. I mean, like, you understand the obvious counterpoint.
Well, it's not based on poverty. On poverty, I'd be fine with it. If somebody said, listen, we're going
to require everybody to submit their
biology
tax returns
is, but the wage gap isn't based on poverty either.
If they want to give money off to somebody who needs financial.
Well, the presumption is that white men have more money than everybody else, I suppose.
I know plenty of white men without two nickels to scrape together.
So do I.
But they have to pay full price. I don't like that.
I think that's the argument that a lot of people had. I mean, you guys received death threats, and they went through an awful lot of negative PR
like
as a result of this last year. No, you're not alone at all.
But if you can't afford the $6 difference in the pricing, then you can't afford to come to New York for a week.
Then why do it?
Mostly a joke. It's PR.
It's
to get people's attention, you know, and it works.
We do Skankfest. Louis J. Gomez and Christine Evans and I do Skankfest every year. This will be our second year, much like Cinderblock. We started last June, and we don't do submissions. And we make sure everybody gets paid for every time they go on stage. Like, we just, cutting out that submission stuff cuts out that conversation entirely.
Yes. Are we not, as
it makes
a,
it a
sorry,
lot easier when you don't
are
have
we not as a society truly creating a white nationality where there wasn't one before? If you define
Nick Griffin
I'm serious now.
No, I know you're serious.
If you define everything in terms of non-whiteness, what are you leaving? And
guys?
No, just white guys. Don't be flippant about it, because what you're leaving is everybody else is a nationality except you guys, you're not. Ridiculous. They're going to say, yes, we are too then.
You can't wonder bread culture us. I completely agree.
Let's ask the only real white man at this table. I only see one.
Wow.
All right.
Nicholas James Hutchinson Griffin III.
Go
My
ahead.
Goodness gracious.
No, I'm all for diversity. I don't, pardon me, I don't like how it, you know, when the government kind of demands it, because then you're screwing with the product that this person is delivering to its customers. And that makes me sad that everything isn't up to them, because they're the one taking the risk. But I do think in the past, the history of, you know, black people and other minorities where they haven't even been allowed to do certain stuff that you
Nick,
have.
Nick, how do you feel about losing?
Losing
your white privilege in a majority non-white nation that is predicted by 2040.
Yes.
Well, you may be dead by then, but
we all could be dead by then.
We all could be dead.
I don't know.
By then.
You know, look, I've had
me and Nick probably. Will
I think
be
it's
going to
be okay regardless, but I do think it does cause so much friction between people when these things tend to come up.
How do you feel about losing? There's two ways to feel about losing. If you live in a society where people don't really emphasize our race and our cult, our ethnicity and our sex, and you're going to become a minority, and then you're like, well, whatever, you know? If you live in a society where that defines everything, you say, oh, shit, I'm going to become a minority, and that matters. Because everything is... Yeah, it matters.
How do the choice to become a minority?
No, because what he was saying is that by 2040, white people are going to be in a minority in the country.
The power structure will live.
Which ought not to matter rationally unless you live in a society where it does matter, in which case you have every right to say, listen, that's not my preferred outcome because this affects my life because people are free to decide that because I'm white, I have to pay more for this. I'm not right for this. It's open season. And I don't want to exaggerate. I'm kind of being devil's advocate. But I think that everybody thinks their little encroachment on this principle is minor, and it is. But the sum total, the death by 1,000 cuts to our country, I think is really serious. We see it everywhere,
so
and
then,
it adds up.
So then the idea is that affirmative action
has... I have brown
has,
children, by the way. I have brown children, for the record. Brown children.
Okay.
I'm get-out-of-jail-free card.
So is the idea that... Also, that's not how that works, but... is the idea then that affirmative action served its purpose? And you feel like we're past that necessity? Or you feel like it was never a necessity? Like, not even back in Mad Men era?
I think the ending of discrimination in the workplace and elsewhere was a necessity. I think that affirmative action
maybe wasn't the right way to go,
and had marginal success.
Effective, yeah, it was marginally effective.
Listen, I used to be for affirmative action when I was young. The story's boring enough. When I was in law school,
I will say that when I go to sushi bar, because I know you're Japanese, I don't see any white guys.
It's true.
Would you want a white guy making your sushi?
Would you?
I don't know. Would you want a black guy doing your taxes?
Would you want a bald guy cutting your hair?
I want a black therapist. Because you're going to tell me it's okay. So when I was in law school, so in law school, there's a law review, which is like the honors kind of publication. And there was to get on law review at Penn, you had to do a writing competition, which is fair. And you just submit an essay. Right. But this is how they did it. Every student's given a number. So you don't put your name on the exam. You hand in your paper to the professors. The professor graded the papers. Then the professor sent the papers to the registrar's office, who looked up your race and gave you extra points if you were black.
So he's got a reason to be pissed.
Yeah. No. And this is what passed as fair.
As fair,
That even at the high level of an Ivy League institution, they still did not expect people to be able to succeed based on the merits. As if, and when does it stop? Well, maybe when you go before the judge. Just say, well, you know, but your lawyer is black, and I mean, it. There's no end to it. Here, just today in New York, they cut out there used to be a literacy test for teachers,
right?
And I think white people were failing. They were all failing badly.
Everybody was.
Only 60% of whites are passing, and like 54% of blacks, something like that. They got rid of the test. They weren't happy with the outcome.
Like, forget about it. They didn't like the numbers, now teachers don't have to know how to read.
That's right. They're screaming about Betsy DeVos. She's gonna kill us. She's gonna kill us. But not having teachers who can pass, and I actually downloaded the test today. It's like a high school senior test. Ought to have been able to pass it pretty easily. These are people with master's. Teachers have to have master's degree, I think.
Not necessarily. They aren't
at
required to on elementary or secondary.
Or high school.
Well, many of them have master's degree, but at minimum they have
they have
regular
to have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah. Bachelor's degree. If you can't pass this test with a bachelor's degree, I don't care what color you are, you deserve not to pass
or
it.
Or if you got a degree without knowing how to read, you're a fucking genius.
Well, that's
two ways of looking at it. Yeah.
No, but this is where diversity gets us.
That's true. But I mean, of course, the counter argument to that being, like with your law school example, that, you know, if somebody grew up with all the privileges that whiteness allows you generally in society, and then somebody grows up.
Awesome privileges, by the way.
I know, some of the best.
Yeah.
And then somebody grows up without all those privileges, but they both, like, it's like the person without the privilege has to work harder to get to the same place.
I agree with you, actually. I think that's
like the argument, like, why they leveling take the those things into account.
It's what I said to you before. Any human who can go before whatever, the university, listen, I got a B-plus average, not the A average, but, you know, I was working two jobs, and I came from a very poor neighborhood, whatever. So really, if you take that into account, I think my B-plus is worth anybody's. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just don't have to do a 23andMe test to decide. You should be able to make the case based on who you are and what your life is. Bill Cosby's kids, to use a trite example, does not need affirmative action, but he's going to get, my kids, by the way, are going to get affirmative action.
Yeah.
My kids are getting, why should they get affirmative action?
If affirmative action is even still happening by the time your kids go to college.
It will be.
I want to hear Nick Griffin's thoughts. We haven't heard from him in a
Well,
in
look,
a few
I gave you my incredible ideas
I want to hear more ideas.
No, I don't know. I think that it's just, I don't know.
Take your time, Nick.
No. I don't know.
He has a career to worry about. He has to make sure he doesn't say anything wrong.
I think in comedy we sort of see a different side of it, too, because I think sometimes because there is such a push for bookers to get a diverse lineup in some places that they end up advancing people who aren't quite ready yet. So we get girls who've been doing comedy for 2 or 3 years who have TV spots, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it can weaken the fabric of comedy if they're not ready for those
TV
spots.
I'd argue it's a bad thing.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you see
it's
it.
Not
you see
a bad
a lot,
thing?
Well, she's saying it is a bad thing.
Because you see it a lot, especially with women, because there's like this, like, oh, you got to have a woman on the show or whatever. And so a lot of the times, a woman ends up on a show because they needed a woman. And then a lot of the times that woman is not as experienced as the male comedians who are also on the show. So then because of that, because of lack of experience,
there's a perception that women
less than
aren't funny.
So then people walk away from that show being like, no, the chick wasn't that funny, right? But it's like, it's not necessarily that women aren't funny. It's that one woman wasn't funny. But somehow that one woman or that one black guy or that one Indian guy, whoever, suddenly has to represent like the whole
Now
group.
You sound like me.
And it creates a
no,
lot
no,
of
No, no, I mean, like, that's the point is that, you know, you're right.
Sorry.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, if you're funny, if you're as funny as the other people on the lineup, then you should definitely be on that lineup. If you're not, you know, keep working.
Can I just say for the record, because not to get angry, I'm
we call this segment Backtrack with Noam Dorm.
My life is a picture book of diversity. In every aspect, the people,
we're backpedaling,
the people in my social life, the people in my love life, the people, my employees, my bands, everything, the people on the stage in the Comedy Cellar. And I managed to do that without ever having to try to take that into account. And I'm very proud of that. I think that's the way it should be. Anyway, that's all I want to say.
I just think that when you hear more and more of these politicians, these are the people that are determining, you know, how we should apply all these, you know, diversity laws and stuff, and they're all so out of touch. I just don't want somebody else telling me how to, you know, sort of live my life and how I need to do these things. And obviously, I'm in a great position. I'm a white guy, and I have
a great position.
A lot of
your life is a mess.
It's a disaster. Who am I kidding? I'm 3 pills away from jumping, so.
I'm only judging by Nick's act, which is a very your shtick. Is the depressed guy.
Yeah.
Right? And how close to that is reality?
Well, I don't know. It's about as close as anyone else's, I would imagine. Yeah.
So, you know, it's
fairly
pretty goddamn close.
It sounds like.
Yeah, it's not a 3-ring circus at the Nick Griffin studio apartment. Let's put it that way.
So Nick is an example of despite his whiteness and
privilege.
Privilege.
Yeah, pretty privileged.
You know, couldn't...
couldn't seem
off.
To make much of it.
No, I mean, but that's the case with most of us in the comedy world.
Comedians are depressed.
Well, we're
hot,
also
hot headlines.
Depressed, and most of us don't hit the big time.
Yeah,
most of us don't grab get the brass ring. You know.
Yep.
But I do think that a comic today, everything else being equal, and no one will argue that everything else is never equal. But in any case, I do think the white man has the hardest road right now in stand-up comedy. For reasons enunciated on this show, people do look for diversity. And there is simply a glut of white dudes.
Well, there's still plenty of really funny white guys.
Well,
and
yes,
they will,
but
and those
there
guys
always
are,
will be.
There always will be, and those guys are going to be fine. And the other
be
thing...
Be fine! But, I mean, gun in my mouth!
There's way more unfunny white guys out there than there are unfunny women who are trying to make a comedy career, too. Like, that's part of the reason why it's a numbers game. There's so many of them that there's a ton of shitty ones out there.
There's a great amount of shitty ones out there.
Also, I have to say, it'll work out because in the end, you cannot impose diversity for diversity's sake.
Correct. You can't legislate ethics.
I mean, we've seen various people who got jobs, whatever it is, clearly because their diversity plays something, and they flop.
Exactly.
But comedy is not it's not sports. So it's not the best guy will eventually.
No, this rating
will
it's
win.
Objective. But
it's not just that it's subjective. Look, if you put me in a TV show and it was the right TV show, I would become a star. But you'd have to put me in that TV show, and then I would fill up Madison Square Garden, and then people would call me a genius.
I think we're also,
people call you a genius.
Thinking that just because you go into show business, you're allowed or you get a career just from wanting to be a part.
That's
it's,
what
a
I
lot
thought.
Of it's so much luck, and regardless of who you are. I remember early on, I worked with someone who had done Letterman like 10 times, and I was just starting. And I said, how do I, get anywhere? And they go, just get funny. The rest, and get to a big city. Because the business is not against you. The business wants funny people. The business, wants to use the right people. But it's not necessarily going to happen. But you have to, just get funny.
Well, get funny. Well,
I think there's very few unfunny people that went along with.
Getting funny guarantees you a living.
Of course it happens. But.
Getting funny guarantees you a living. But that's it.
But that's it.
By the way, did you read that book about Letterman that's coming out?
No, it hasn't come out yet. April 11th.
But you read the accounts of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. They tore
it.
It doesn't seem right to me.
Who wrote it? Was it
Jason Zinnemann. You know that guy, right?
New York Times guy.
My experience with Letterman is confined to, the three or four words he said to me after my sets when I did the show. I can only say that it wasn't overwhelming warmth. Coming from him, but I can't speak to whether or not he's the man portrayed in this book. I will say that Conan, when you do Conan, he can't...
Effusive.
Yes. He'd sit down. Oh, I love having you. Thanks for coming back. Well, we love... Letterman comes over and he says, whatever, good to see you. I got the sense that had I walked out the door and been hit by a taxi cab and someone said, hey, Letterman, that comic you just had, he was just killed. My sense is Letterman would not be heartbroken.
Might shed a tear.
I think Conan would be very upset. Now that's just my sense, and I could be wrong.
That's more an indication of his limitations than
whose
what
limitations.
Do you want from him? He's Letterman. A New York guy. He's,
obviously he's got some problems.
That said,
he's
a
troubled dude.
That said, he's the best that ever did that. That ever I think did late night.
Johnny Carson was a dark personality in Letterman, but I, as a boss, I don't know if you feel this way. It's just like it's just so easy to criticize the boss with the pressures on him and
the name on the marquee.
And having to be on all the time and it's just everything you do. If you have a bad day, if you say it doesn't come out right, it's magnified. And then of course people have a chip on their shoulder about you or disgruntled in some way. Get the megaphone of a journalist who can expand that into any. Percentage of his
you're talking, of course,
take
about
on
the,
you that he wants.
About the Lugan press.
The Lugan press? What's that?
That's what the alt-right calls the press. It's German for lying press.
Oh, I never... I don't... Dan,
it's also
Dan,
what Hitler called
Dan
the press.
Dan is a regular on the alt-right website.
I monitor the alt-right. I want to know what's going on. If it's time to leave the country, I want to advance notice. Go ahead, Noah.
But no, I just somehow, not knowing Letterman, I just feel like this is just... He can't be that bad. I just...
No, that's possible. I can only tell you again... He's not an overwhelmingly warm character from my experience,
right.
Limited though it might be. Beyond that, the people that work for
Can
him
you
that
imagine
I know...
Can the tell-all book about you, Dan Natterman, if you were to become famous? I mean, it would
I don't
be
think
harsh.
Anybody's got a bad word to say about me. But that's because I haven't made it big.
Exactly.
When everybody loves the loser.
The haters come out of the woodwork.
But when all of a sudden you're a big
shot...
As
soon as you get success.
Now, Noam, the truth is, Noam... his staff here. I don't hear bad things said about Noam, and he's the name on the marquee. He's the big guy.
But if somebody wanted to write a book about me and I were famous, they would find there are people out there
they'd
who will say
dirt.
Bad.
Otherwise, you can't sell a book.
The waitress who was here for 3 weeks. Or
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always someone.
Yeah,
no matter who you are. But that's how you know that you're successful if the people are saying bad things about you.
Well, I don't know about that, but I've had had disgruntled employees. I've had disgruntled employees who, like 10 years later, called me up on some 12-step program to apologize, you know, in tears, you know, who realized that it was really them.
I believe it was the great Bernie Brillstein that said, you're no one if no one wants you dead or something like
That's right. You're nobody unless somebody wants you dead.
And I think there's a good deal of truth to that.
So I hope somebody comes to Eddie Brill kind of came to Letterman's defense, and I hope other people do.
Oh,
come
in
to
the paper recently?
Yeah.
On Facebook, I think.
He came on Facebook. He definitely was.
I mean, I've known
him.
People that have worked for him, and nobody describes him as a horrible person.
No. Eddie speaks very, very highly of him.
Tough, you know? It's tough to be David Letterman. It's tough. I tell Essie sometimes.
The biggest thing in the world for about 10, 15 years. I mean, he was the biggest. It does a little bit of
a household name.
Biggest
thing
in TV. Hey,
just to be living as, you know, failing in a sense, you know, you're number two, you're number three. Day in, day out.
I mean, like that much, too.
That takes a toll on a guy, you know? So you might get a little short-tempered, a little brittle, you know, because you're fucking...
And I don't think he was operating with a full, like you know, he has some trouble. Like, he likes to be by himself. He doesn't really like the spotlight. He's a little bit of a hermit. Like, that kind of stuff is very incongruous with what he was doing, you know? What'd you say?
Is that Letterman or me?
No, Letterman, not you.
So I felt bad for Letterman. Anyway, we're about out of time.
Nick is one of the greats. I want to thank you, Nick.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
He is one of the funniest comics we have, and his point of view is a unique one.
How many Letterman spots?
11.
11 Whoa. Letterman spots.
So he
is that the most?
No, God, no. Jake Johansson had something like 30 or
30.
Something.
Uh-huh.
He makes suicidal thoughts funny.
Yeah.
By the way, you can hear me. This is interesting, Noam. I told you about ResistanceRadio.com. ResistanceRadio.com. I did a promo for The Man in the High Castle, which is a Amazon show about The Man in the High Castle. It's fine. They made me watch it because I did the promo. Yeah, it's good. It's
a good show. It's all right.
But I did a promo where I was this DJ in the neutral zone of the... Because it's a show about when the Nazis and the Japanese won World War II. So America is half of America's... ruled
Resistance.
By Nazis and half of America's ruled by the Japanese, and then there's like a neutral zone in the middle. So I'm like a DJ in the neutral zone talking about, you know, resisting, me and two other people. So you can hear that on resistanceradio.com. You might enjoy it, even if you're not a fan of The Man in the High Castle. It went a little bit viral because a lot of Trump people assumed that Resistance Radio was an anti-Trump radio station.
Hilarious.
And so we got a lot of press in about that. But anyway.
We didn't get to talk about the Rachel Maddow debacle, which is the best thing ever. Anyway, I'll talk about it in the next show.
We can talk about it on the next show.
Yeah.
We would like to thank Rebecca, I say this like I'm the host. Like, you know, there's really no power structure here. Noam, it's Noam's show.
It's a little loose.
Sometimes I just take it. Rebecca Trent, everybody, from The Creek and the Cave.
Thank you. Come to the Creek Awards on April 30th.
The old Howard. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. I spoke over it. Go ahead.
Oh, come to the Creek Awards on April 30th.
And the old Howard Stern, I used to clap. You remember that?
Yes. And if you are transgendered female or an amputee.
If you're anything, we're in general submission, so white
Sometimes
guys are now welcome
thing.
To submit until April 8th, Center Black Comedy Festival.
Yippee!
Do you know that you can't say expectant mother anymore?
Why not?
What?
Because
what do you have to say?
You have to say expectant person because you don't know what the human that's pregnant identifies with.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
What do you
it's
mean?
Too confusing.
Whoa, whoa. It makes sense to me.
Well,
I just scratch the
what do you mean you can't what do you mean you can't say? You read one article or one blog saying you shouldn't say it? Doesn't mean you can't say it.
It was a British medical journal. I mean, no, it's getting some traction.
I was at a firing range in Pennsylvania and they had pregnant persons on the signs now.
Good
so
for
it's
you
hilarious.
Defending the Second Amendment.
We're just becoming seahorses, that's all.
And actually, on that issue, I question myself whether or not I'm being unreasonable because, you know, I try to put myself in the position of somebody who was transgender.
Pregnant?
How would I feel? You know, it's kind of nice that society
recognizes
is learning to recognize that this exists, but it does seem at some point to be.
The bathroom conversation is super dumb, though.
It seems to go beyond what even a transgender person would even care about.
Correct.
I mean, you know, in which case, you know.
Well, that's why I always just try to, like, find those people, ask them how they want it, and then I'm like, okay, cool.
And follow the rules.
Who was your name again?
Allison Klemp.
Allison Klemp. The Klemp is obviously the German side of the family.
Yes.
And your mother, of course, is Japanese-American.
Half Japanese. Yes.
My mother's Japanese and German. Oh. And then the rest is like a hodgepodge of German and other white.
Is he only a quarter Japanese?
Quarter Japanese.
And yet, it manifests itself in rather striking fashion.
Yes. Well,
you're a pretty little half Mexican.
Thank you. Gracias.
Are you going to try to pick her up, or can we sign
off?
No,
I'm not going to do any such thing.
By the way, believe me, he qualifies for diversity at least three different ways. Good night, everybody.